Hello and welcome to the Wild Mystic Woman podcast, an interview series of powerful conversations on womanhood, spirituality, creativity, business, leadership, and sacred activism. I'm your host, Leila Saad, and I'm a writer and mentor for spiritual women doing sacred work. In each episode, we hold intimate and holy conversations about the heroine's journey, the spiritual entrepreneurial journey, and what it means to be a wild mystic woman. So today we are speaking to Nadia Munler. Nadia is a health and sensuality coach who guides women to sensual nourishment and embodied power by helping them reconnect to their own body voice. She is immensely passionate about supporting women in their journey back to their embodied essence so they can feel vibrant, alive, and free again. Through her embodied dance classes, immersion workshops, and one-on-one coaching, Nadia has guided women on over 5 continents in their embodiment journey. Well, welcome to the show, Nadia.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited. So a little bit of background information. Nadia and I actually recorded a podcast interview a couple of months ago, and it was at a time when Zoom had just made a switch over on their software. And so I thought I had recorded the conversation, and it was like an awesome conversation. And it turned out we hadn't recorded a single thing. And I was so pissed. So I'm so happy that we get to do this again, because the work that Nadia does, I think it's so important for women. And the way that she speaks about it really helped me to connect to my own embodied essence. And I know it's going to serve so well to anyone listening to this conversation. So here we go. Let's dive in. So my first question, Nadia, I define a wild mystic woman as a woman who is devoted to fully living and leading in her truth. So I want to know, what personal truths are you currently living and leading with?
I love this question, and it's so important. And you know, for me, it's very clear that what I am, the truth that I am currently embodying is that embodied women are going to be and are being the revolution right now. Mm. I think that we are at a time where there's huge shifting in our systems, our financial systems, our social systems, patriarchy as a whole. And so therefore, an embodied woman, a woman who is deeply connected to herself, which then allows her to be deeply connected to the women and men around her, and then deeply connected to the world around her, and the planet, and nature, the whole shebang. It's when she is connected, that and embodied essentially, that we are able to, in a very slow moving way, in a very feminine fluid way, start a revolution, start a transformation in a system that is just no longer working for anyone, not women, not men, and sure as hell not the planet.
So let's talk about this word embodiment, because myself, and I believe many of the women who are listening to this conversation have, you know, read all the self-help books, have done so much self-discovery work, you know, digging into what's my trauma, where's my wounding, what triggers me, what mindset changes do I need to make. And I find that it's easy for me to get things on a kind of mind cerebral level. But when you're talking about embodiment, for me, that's physical. That's not just being able to say, okay, there's my inner child thing coming up. There's my relationship coming up. For me, when I hear the word embodiment, I think of the physical body. Can you talk to us about what is embodiment?
Yeah. Still figuring it out. I definitely know what embodiment feels like. And I think any woman will know what embodiment feels like when she's in it, right? When she feels connected to her senses. I think that embodiment and the process of getting there is a complicated one. Mm. In that we are, or should I say the behind the scenes that's happening is complicated. The process itself is not. I mean, you can go to a yoga class, you can, trace your fingers along your curves, close your eyes, take a nice deep breath in and a nice exhale out, and ta-da, you're embodied. You know, you may not stay embodied, right? You may need tools that are a little bit more, a little bit more complex, or that you've been doing a little bit longer for you to stay embodied throughout your day. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, during today's conversation. But the actual process of getting embodied, I mean, can take literally like 2 seconds. You take a breath in and a breath out. Mm-hmm. What I mean is that behind the scenes of embodiment and what's actually happening on a, like neuroscience physiological level is the piece that I am still piecing together. Mm. Because I know experientially what's working with me, what works with my clients. But now I'm in a phase in my career where I'm getting really excited to understand a little bit more, you know, what actually is firing and what's going on in our nervous system. And how is this piece, how's the nervous system connected to going from what we call out of your head and into your body, which is really a very simplified pop culture way of saying it. It's one that we all get, right? We get, oh, I'm in my headspace, I'm in my mind, I'm overthinking, monkey mind, you know, and then, oh, I'm in my body, I feel connected, I'm in flow, I feel more, I don't know, what other words come to mind when you think about being in your body?
The word for me that always comes to mind is presence. And I think that's something that you, when I come into contact with someone who has a great level of presence, it's not charisma. And it's not like NLP, like, you know, creating an illusion of presence. It's, yeah, like you say, it's like how do you explain the word embodiment? Like, how do you explain the word presence? It's a feeling you get when you're in the presence of someone who has their inner presence. It's like they're not trying to prove anything, and they're also not so shrunk in on themselves that they're like self-deprecating or self, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, so for each of us, we're going to use different semantics, right? But ultimately, what I'm really enjoying geeking out on lately is trying to find what is the same. There's one thing that's happening, and in each, I guess, modality or philosophy, there's different words being used, different semantics being used here as to explain the process. So for one person, it might make sense to say, oh, we're getting out of our heads and into our bodies. In neuroscience, it might be, okay, going from being very left-brained to operating more in equally in your right and your left hemisphere. Mm-hmm. For some, it's going to be using, you know, the terms parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. But I think ultimately it all is coming down to the same thing, which is that we are all overly operating in our left brain, which is what we also call masculine, the masculine values, the masculine way of being, which is one that's very linear, very trajectory based, very much about getting things done, your to-do list, having results, the values that capitalism is based on. And so what they found out, what they've been talking about now in the neuroscience piece of all of this, amongst the therapists and psychiatrists community, is that they're realizing that most of us operate 75% in our left brain.
Wow.
fear.
Mm-hmm. And only 25% in our right. So when a lot of us in coaching and maybe in more like priestess work are talking about, you know, masculine and feminine energy, we're also saying ultimately the same thing, which is none of us is just masculine or just feminine. We all mm-hmm. have both. But most women nowadays are feeling like they're hyper masculine in the way that they operate because the world asks them to be that way, because the world rewards
right.
productivity and results and spreadsheets and getting things done, and does not reward so much the adoration of beauty or the slowing down or self-care or intuition, beautiful body wisdom, like the importance and the incredible power in body wisdom, not spoken about and definitely disregarded, and especially in the biomedical community. The idea of cyclical, rhythmical ways of living for in the seasons, and also the seasons within our monthly cycle. Mm-hmm. Again, not something that, you know, you're old white male boss is gonna, you know, like if you come into work, if you have a 9-to-5, you're like, I'm sorry, I can't do that task because I'm a luteal.
It's my moon time, so I'm going to my red tent for a couple of days.
Yeah, the guy's gonna look at you and be like, all right, that's fine, you know? And so we are living in a world where there is so much focus on left brain, masculine, you know, this side of operating, and much less in feminine or what other people might call. And what I like about the left and right brain thing is that it doesn't bring on the baggage of feminine and masculine, which
right.
sometimes
it's a binary.
Can get a little bit confusing for people. And I love using the words masculine and feminine. I really connect to that. But I also am trying to get a little bit more on the 2017 train and be like, all right, well, how do we, you know, let's make sure that our conversations are inclusive and that also there's places where it's a bit more gender neutral and where we're really talking about, well, what is the science that's happening behind all of this? So I'm sort of in this place where, as you can tell, I'm figuring out what's the best way to talk about it. And I'm loving that I can also see how there's this pattern in every single modality where it's pretty much the same thing. What's clear and what is fact-based evidence and science is the fact that, yes, we are operating in one part of our brain. So really, when we say getting out of our heads and into our bodies, we're really actually trying to operate, we're trying to move from just working, you know, in one specific part of our brain to all of our brain. Mm. So it can get confusing, but it's lovely because the embodiment piece essentially is, for me, it's really about the tool. So the tool is your senses, right? So when you slow down, and you connect to your sense of touch, you connect to your sense of taste, your sense of hearing, your sense of seeing, sense of smelling, right? Mm-hmm. The more you slow down and tune into either one sense at a time or all together at once, you are going to, like you said, you're going to get more present. And the idea of presence and the idea of being, this mode of operating is the right brain. Mm. And so it is through getting connected to our senses, our sensuality, getting what we feel like a feeling of embodiment because we're in our senses, that helps shift something within our brain. But never means we're actually out of our heads, because of course we're there. It's just that for us, we think of head as like heady, monkey mind, getting things done, rational, you know, that sort of a thing. So
right.
it's a tricky but really fun place to be exploring, I think. Right now.
Yeah. And I love the different ways that you've spoken about this, especially, you know, that right brain, left brain, feminine, masculine. I just love that, you know, what you've said about trying to make sure that you're not using language, which kind of is exclusionary. I was listening to my friend Carmen Spaniola, who is the host of the Numinous podcast. She has this great intro to tarot course that I've been doing. And she talks about it as directive versus receptive energy.
Mm.
Yeah, which I really resonated with. You know, I really love that. But it's what you're saying is so interesting because it's not that we're no longer wanting to be masculine. It's that the masculine has been so overly hyped within us and is so rewarded by the environments that we live in that the feminine, the receptive, the right brain side doesn't get the opportunity to be fully used in a way that can really honor our entire wholeness. It's like we're missing this really important piece that could bring so much, just so much of everything, right? Just so much peace, nourishment, creativity, connection. And so this work that you're doing of embodiment, and this work that each one of us are doing in our own way, for me is important reclamation work. It's reclaiming the parts that we've been told that's not enough, or it's not worthy, or it's not, you know, it's not helpful. What gets in the way? What are the things that you've been seeing with yourself and with your clients? Are these barriers, that these thoughts, these habits, these beliefs that get in the way of us being able to reclaim these pieces?
Mm-hmm. Trauma. Trauma on a very physical level. So, you know, lots of times we think of trauma, oh, something big has have to happen. You were in a war, or, you know, there was sexual trauma, or you were physically abused. When in fact, you know, we have very, very basic intrusions that can just wire themselves into our nervous system, especially when we are young and tender and taking on everything. And so, you know, a lot of the work, I think, for many of us is understanding our nervous system a little bit better, and understanding that underneath everything, there's a deep desire for safety and connection, and that we can only feel safe and connected when we are operating in one, also these are like different gears again, in one gear as opposed to another gear. And so you've got the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system is the one in charge of, you know, what we call fight, flight, or freeze, which is when you start to feel very, you know, you may open up your online banking and see your credit card bill, and that might have you go into, you know, flight would be, I'm going to close this and go eat some cookies now. Fight, where you might sit down and try to problem solve the hell out of it, or come up with a game plan really hardcore. And, you know, shut down would just be like, oh, I just can't deal.
Right.
You know, and go into full on panic about it. And so, when you are in situations like that, you want to figure out, well, what are the tools I need to get me back into operating in a different gear, which is that of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the one that is responsible for regulation and for health and balance. And so many of us are in this low-grade fight or flight space. What happens is, when you look at so many people being, you know, chronic illnesses on the rise, and you know, I was recently watching a documentary where they were saying the numbers are that, I guess, I don't know what they technically call it, but all the diseases that were more like virus-based and contagious, I guess, contagious disease has gone down tremendously over like the last 100 years, right? So there's a lot less deaths there because of biomedicine. But actually, chronic conditions and things like, you know, diabetes and heart conditions and cancer, these have been on the rise. And part of that is because so many of us are operating in low-grade fight or flight mode, which does not allow our system to go into regulation. And it's only when you're in regulation that your body actually knows how to heal herself perfectly. She just can't do it when she's thinking a tiger is about to pounce on her, which is you know, what fight or flight initially was created for. That's why we have that as part of our system, because our bodies are these beautifully complex and whole systems that can do everything on their own. They can heal themselves. They can recalibrate. And the only reason that they don't is because we've created an environment and a system that has us, you know, constantly scared and freaking out on some level. And so we're in that fight or flight mode. And so we never get back in. It's really rare. We have pockets of time where we're in regulation. So our body can't catch up. Our body doesn't have enough time when we are, you know, what other people call like, you know, in self-care mode or slow down mode. That's the state we're supposed to be in at all times, right? We're supposed to be relaxed at all times so that our body can, our immune system only functions in that state. Our digestive system, you know, can digest and do all the beautiful things that it does on its own only when you're there. So, you know, IBS is a perfect example, right? A lot of people get that like gurgling, oh my God, I suddenly have to run to the bathroom feeling. Or they have an interview or an exam. And a lot of that is because your system is actually going into fight or flight mode. And so it's, you know, it's just fascinating. I just find all this stuff so fascinating. And it's so beautiful because, you know, a woman can come to me as a, as someone who's a health and sensuality coach. She may be like, okay, well, I want to talk to you about the health piece. You know, this is what's coming up with, you know, my digestion and da, da, da. And then we work on it. Yes, of course we work on like the basic nutritional stuff, but you know, the nervous, I can instantly tell that the nervous system is probably another piece that we want to address. We want to get her connected to her breath. We want her to slow down. We want to see, can she do some meditations or moving meditations that help her feel more connected and get her out of that fight or flight mode and back into regulation? Because yeah, she knows what to do. Her body knows exactly what to do.
Well, this is a great time to speak about your work, because as you're speaking, and I was particularly struck by what you said, like, this is how we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be relaxed at all times, right? But we're not, because we live in the world that we live in, and we're juggling all the things that we're juggling. And so how can we, as modern women, regardless of whether we're entrepreneurs or we work from home or we're stay-at-home parents, you know, how can we have this as a practice that we live in rather than something that we just do as a meditation practice in the morning, for example? How can we throughout our day be tuning back into our embodiment, tuning back into our presence in a way that's accessible to everyone?
Yeah. It's a great question. I think that, you know, starting your day with something like a meditation is actually the best thing that you can start off with, because what you're doing is, again, you're recalibrating at the beginning of the day. You're going, all right, you're setting the tone. Hey, I'm relaxed. I'm not getting up and checking my phone and my emails before I've even opened my eyes, and adrenaline's up and cortisol's up, but not because it's supposed to be, but because I'm freaking out. And instead, you know, start mindful and start present. Now, throughout the day, similar to the idea of meditation, which is there are times the entire time that you're sitting in a meditation, you have thought after thought after thought after, oh, whoops, forgot to do that. Oh, didn't do this. Oh, what about that thing that I never resolved with that person? What about that? Right? Like all these things come through sometimes. Sometimes it's nice and quiet, but many times it isn't. And that is the practice of meditation, is constantly being challenged by the monkey mind and going, I see you and I release you. And so in a way, we keep that going into our day-to-day. So even as an email comes in, or as we look at the to-do list and start to get overwhelmed, or as we, you know, as life throw, you know, your kid like pukes up and has to stay at home and you're like, no, I have this podcast interview, right? Like all sorts of things can happen, right? Life throws these things at you, and these are beautiful like initiations to go, all right, do I need like a 30-second timeout, or what do I know always plugs me in? So I'll give you an example. For me, taking my hand, or it could be, of course, the hand of like my partner or a friend, but for me, the easiest thing is accessibility to my own palm.
Right.
Taking my own hand and putting it right at the nape of my neck. There's something that it does to my nervous system. It might be a different spot for you, but when I just stroke my neck really softly, there is the soothing, like it's nearly like I'm starting to embody my own like a nurturing mama energy. And I am treating my body like she's my child, you know. She's scared, she's freaking out. The to-do list may have triggered something that you know, is in her nervous system from years and years ago. Fear around not being loved enough because she doesn't get this done, or fear around safety and money. Like, there's so many different reasons why these basic things overwhelm us. And so when I just take it back to like my primal animal body, which is essentially my nervous system in that fight or flight mode, I can get myself out of that by what I know to me to be a trigger in the good way, in that it plugs me back in.
Mm.
For other people, it might be as simple as like taking a few deep breaths. And, you know, one that I love to do that was taught to me by one of my coaches is, you know, inhale, you're just doing very simple breathing, and you can do this anywhere, anytime you're standing, waiting for a table at a restaurant, or you're in the bathroom. Like, it really doesn't have to be that you're in a special sacred place, but where you inhale and you exhale, but your exhale is twice as long as your inhale.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that specific type of breath work that slows down again, gets you out of that fight or flight mode and back into regulation. And so throughout the day, if we don't try to overcomplicate things and just find what are those few things, going to be different for each person, but what is that thing that works for you and your body that brings you right back, and use them. It could be a song. Maybe there's times where you just are like, oh, there's that. For the first couple of years, when I left my former career as a film producer, and I was just starting off entrepreneurship, and I was also like, I just took off and had a nomadic life for a year and a half with a new partner of mine. I mean, everything was so new.
Mm.
So I would have a lot of anxiety around, oh my God, did I make the right choice? And what am I even doing with my life? You know, the typical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this one song that, from the first time I heard it, it was I don't know if you know Snatam Kaur. I don't even know if I said her name, right?
Snatam Kaur, yeah.
Yeah, such a beautiful, beautiful voice. And she chants different mantras. And usually it's not, you know, I don't really listen to that generally, that type of music. But there was something about this one song that drew me in so deeply. And when I later found out what the words were, it was about coming home and being your own essentially. And my body must have picked up on it. I don't know, but I just loved it so much. And it was that song that, like, when things would get out of hand, I go, okay, gotta get that song on. And it was like a lullaby, you know. Mm. I think it spoke to that really scared little girl in me that I hadn't pinpointed yet, that I didn't know how to speak to yet. And so the song did it for me. So there's so many different ways to go about it. Music, breath work, certain movement, certain touch that really get you right back into where you need to be and have you go, all right, I see you, and releasing you, and I'm back. Because all of life is really about like falling off the train and getting back on, recommitting every single time. And that can be moment to moment. I mean, that's what mindfulness practice is, which is essentially embodiment, right? The same thing.
I love this, because what I'm hearing is that, yes, we live in a messy, complicated modern world, but reconnecting to ourselves is as simple as taking a breath. And I love that that's so accessible. And I also love that it's different for each one of us. So it's up to us to discover what those things are. And it's up to us to say just because it's simple doesn't mean it doesn't work, you know?
Yeah. We like to overcomplicate. That's the patriarchy again. That's all that like left brain stuff.
Yes.
It's like, oh, gotta have a fancy formula.
Yes. And and what I also love is that we the listeners of this show will know, if you're listening in for the first time, when we do these interviews, I choose a deck, an oracle or tarot deck for our guests, and I pull three cards, and I ask our speaker today, Nadia, to just riff on whatever comes up. So the deck that came up for Nadia was the Miracles Now deck by Gabrielle Bernstein, and the cards that came up, you've already spoken about all of the things.
Of course.
And you know, I intuitively just pulled these. One of the cards that I pulled, I actually thought, no, this is not related to Nadia's subject. I put it back in. I don't usually do this, but I put it back in and then pulled again, and the same card came forward. And you've actually spoken about it twice. So that's really interesting. So the three cards, Nadia, and whatever more comes up for you on this, but I think it's just such an affirmation of what you've spoken about. The first one says, I can find peace in every breath.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The second card says, I pray before I pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it so interesting that you've spoken about, you know, like credit card bills or fear around money. You know, fear around money and what that does to our level of embodiment and our level of presence. And then the third one is, my presence is my power. I actually have a question around this particular last one. I mean, you can speak on the others as well, but this last one, just in the last thing you said about patriarchy, and I know we talk a lot about patriarchy, power and patriarchy, women's power and patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
What comes up for you around that?
Oh my
so
God.
Much.
How much time do you have? Women's power and patriarchy.
And that presence is power.
Yeah. Well, man, all right, let me take a deep breath and think about this for a moment. See which piece of this complex system I want to peel away first. So if it weren't for the patriarchy, I wouldn't really have a job because everything that I do is about helping heal some sort of wound that was created by the patriarchy. And I, for the longest time, I had so much hesitancy around using this word because I was like, oh, I don't know, I don't want to be the angry feminist like voice, and it's not my jam to get like super up in there. There was just always a really negative connotation, I think, for the longest time around that. And then in the last few years, I think people are so fed up and really realize that this is such a big issue, that this system is not working for anyone, because what it's doing is it's, again, in that valuation like hierarchy of like, oh, this is valued and this is valued, but emotionality and creativity and flow is much less valued. It's affecting not only the women, it's affecting the men too.
Yes.
Men are being sent also this messaging of, you have to man up and don't show your feelings and blah, 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 all this stuff. And it's not serving anyone anymore. The men are not fully connected to themselves and can't embrace their wholeness, something that you mentioned earlier, which I love. It's very important, embracing our full range and our wholeness. And the women are the same thing. It's becoming really, really challenging. And so for me, the work around essentially healing that disconnection, that rift between you and your body and your body's wisdom, which also the men are very disconnected from mostly. I think, in fact, even the disconnected women are more open to at least entertaining the concept, versus men are just like, oh, what? I just get up and do my thing. You know, there is a very, their connection to their bodies is also a little bit confusing because of the messaging that's been sent towards them that they need to, you know, be a certain way. And
it's that toxic hyper-masculinity, right?
And so really for me that, women's power and is in, I mean, when we use the word embodiment or mindfulness or presence, it's really to me all the same thing, which is just being really in the moment, really here, really sensing, not just thinking through moment by moment. And so for me, women's power is that in which, you know, we're gonna attain most of our power when we are present, when we are connected, and that's the way to actually essentially I don't want to use the word topple or tear down the patriarchy, because it's not going to be that type of, it's not even, well, that's the thing. So all of these are like very interesting. They're all masculine ways of a revolution.
Right.
And I see this one as a very slow creeping feminine revolution, right? Because it is the rise of the divine feminine, and in both men and in women. And so it doesn't do the in your face, okay, now we're taking over version of a revolution. It's not a coup.
Nobody wants a matriarchy either. That's not where we're asking for, right?
Right.
Right.
But what's happening instead, the way that I see this revolution happening, is that it's a fluid trickle down, a spreading, a ripple effect. The way that water, you know, would start to nourish plants, it just, like, you know, slowly trickles down and nourishes yet another tree and yet another seed here and yet another. And we do that through the work that we do in the circles that we create, women's circles, women's programs, yoga classes, wellness retreats. All of these are containers to, and they're safe containers that allow women and men to get more connected to their divine feminine, so that they then have a little bit more connection to that, and then they trickle that to their friends,
yes,
the people they're around. And it's like a very, it's like slow moving, but we know that with the numbers game, it's like that can go from, oh yeah, it's just a little local thing, to like it really spreads quickly.
Yes.
Because every time you are getting someone else more connected, you're really, it's an exponential growth, because they then take, you know, go to another 10 people and another 20 people and so on and so forth. And so I get really excited about that, because I'm like, it's not going to be an in your face, like, yeah, you know, these women's marches, like these are all beautiful. They were very clear signs of what was going on, but they were also, you know, the most masculine version of that in a way. You know, we have to have a little bit of those things happening as well for the world to be like, oh right, this is happening. Yeah. But I think most of the actual work is happening under the surface.
It's you and me, right? It's the day to day, not necessarily not just the activists who are in the political movements, which are really, really important, but also us living our daily lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then we could talk about the patriarchy. Just kind of moving on from that. There's a word that you use in your work that I really love, like a term, and it's body voice.
Mm-hmm.
What is body voice?
Well, it's very simply the voice of your body. It's the way in which your body speaks to you. Like we had said earlier, you know, if you believe, if you are on board with the philosophy that your body is whole and is a complex holistic system that can heal herself, then you will want to listen to what she has to say, because she knows what to do. We're, again, overcomplicating it with all sorts of other things. But in fact, for most things, obviously, you know, not counting things like surgery and emergency situations in which other animals would just normally die because they don't have doctors. Mm. But when it comes to like basic things and overall like day-to-day health, animals don't have doctors, and they don't go to therapists, and they're fine. Because they let their body lead. They're still in that primal space. Whereas our brains have evolved so much that I think we've gotten a little bit cocky. You know, we've gotten a little bit like, oh, we're not part of nature. We forget that we are just another animal. We just happen to be a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
And that we still have it. We are part of a much bigger system that is holistic as well, and that fits in perfectly. And we come in and we're like, okay, let's make these cities and industrial revolution, and let's do this and that. And suddenly there's people who are so disconnected from nature and the land that they start to think that they are not animals.
That we've somehow transcended that this environment that we live in and this ecosystem that we live in.
Yeah, which is not helping anyone, because if we actually accept that we are part of something bigger, then we can let the system do the work it's meant to do, both the system of the entire planet around us and the system within us, because we are part of that bigger system. And so the body voice is simply, you know, a way in which I refer to as your body speaking to you. That we usually shut down. So, you know, usually if you have a stomach pain, you're like, okay, I guess I'll take Maalox or whatever people take and move on. If I have a really bad period cramps and acne and hormonal issues, I'm going to get on the pill. If I have a migraine, I take Advil and then I keep pushing through and go to work because my boss needs this deadline thing. And so that's, you know, we don't even notice that we shut down our body's voice over and over again. Nope, no time for that. Sorry, not convenient. Not right now. And when in fact, that body voice is trying to help us and is trying to tell us, you know what, I'm actually giving you a gift, which is, hey, something's not working. Something's not right. You need to pay attention to whatever's going on, because that's what pain is. Right. Right. Pain is asking to be seen and to be felt and to be witnessed. And usually it's once you actually go there. So if it's an emotional pain, then usually it processes much easier than if you continuously deny it. And if it's physical pain, you need to address, well, what is actually causing this? Not let me mask it. Mm. And so, you know, this is a lot of what I do in what I call, you know, phase one of the embodiment journey. It's got four phases. And in that phase one, what we're really doing is addressing all the physical symptoms, all the things that we usually mask up and numb out. And we go, all right, we're stripping away all of that. We're seeing what's actually going on. What is the reality of my body? And sometimes it's not good, you know, like when I had to first, you know, deal with all of my physical symptoms, and I had a lot. I had ulcers in my stomach. I had major hormonal issues, PCOS. I had acne. I mean, this was just like a never-ending list of things. And so one thing at a time, I slowly started to heal naturally and holistically from the inside out. And people don't like to do that sometimes. They don't like to listen to their body voice because it's uncomfortable. It's not convenient. It takes more commitment.
Yeah.
Because it's the sustainable inside out approach as opposed to the, okay, I'll deal with this later. It's like the difference between going, all right, I'm really going to clean out my closet and organize it properly. Or like, I'm just going to keep shoving this into that under my bed and into the closet. And look, my room looks so clean, but you open the closet and like stuff's like just comes falling out. Mm. So of course you have to go, all right, I'm ready to do the closet cleaning. Right. So it can be challenging for people to go, all right, I'm ready to go there. I'm ready to listen. Cause sometimes what you hear is not necessarily nice stuff initially. And sometimes your body is really, upset and resentful a little bit at the fact that you've been essentially ignoring her for I don't know how long. And so there has to be some healing that happens within the relationship as well. So you can start to see your body as a blessing, as a gift, as this beautiful vessel that you have the incredible opportunity to like reside in, in this lifetime. You know, I had a client recently, it was so cute. She was like, you know, I just had this realization, like, I could have been an amoeba, but I'm not. I'm a human and I have legs and I have arms. And that means I can dance to like a Sia song.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
You know, and we forget that like you could have not had that, you know, I mean, I don't know if ants dance, but like, what if you were an ant, you know, like you're just like an ant and you never had a radio or you didn't hear music. I don't know. Like that's a different life. I'm sure there's some cool stuff that ants can do that we can't, but you know, it's like sometimes you got to take it out, you know, really go macro and see the bigger picture to go, actually, you know what? So what if I have this muffin top thing and these jeans that are ridiculous anyways that no one could fit in, you know, like 5% of the population could fit in. I have legs that work. And I get to dance and feel the joy of breathing and feel the joy of having sex and feel the joy of singing and being alive. And there's something really pretty cool about that because next time around, you might just be a molecule or something. I don't know how it works.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, that piece that you were talking about, you know, the metaphor of clearing out your closet and then, you know, clearing, like metaphorically clearing out the things that are not working. In doing that work for myself, when that has happened, there's things that I have had to face that bring up shame, that bring up rage, that bring up grief, and a bunch of other yucky stuff that, you know, we don't like looking at. How do we move through that? How do we navigate that?
Because it's
like, you know, you can't, the only way through it is through it. You know, that's what I found, right?
Yep. Mm. Compassion for yourself, permission, a really awesome group of women around you or men, but there's a special thing with sisterhood, but just a community around you that have got you, that can hold you as you're, you know, falling apart and just going into, you know, cause to when you say falling apart, it's not, you know, I don't want people to misunderstand that this is like a bad thing or that there's a negative connotation to it. Sometimes we have to completely dissolve to put ourselves back together in a slightly different way. It has to happen. And so having the container, whether it is a group of women, whether it is a coach or a therapist, or it might even be at your like dance studio or yoga studio if you have a close community there, but having that safe space where you're like, I can fall apart and these people are just going to witness and hold and be there. And then I have, you know, I'm just going to have compassion and give myself as much permission to take as long as I need to take, which is the hardest part because we're always like, I got to get back to doing this other thing like life, you know, and sometimes we're not ready. We're not equipped to do that yet because we have to go through that winter, that transformation. And so, you know, compassion, sisterhood, permission. Yeah.
I love that piece around sisterhood, around community, because I know personally, again, and just in my work, there is so much healing that comes from being witnessed through your transformation, right? Being witnessed without judgment, being loved regardless of whatever shameful things that we believe we've done or we carry with us. I imagine in your embodied dance classes, like your live classes, that community, that sisterhood is a really important piece.
Yes, totally. And part of the reason why I started off teaching Embody as an all-women's space is, and this is, you know, it's for anyone who identifies as woman, this space. And the reason for that is that I wanted to strip away the variable of the male gaze, because it's just one, there's quite a few others, but it's just one, one variable that can affect a woman's ability to really sink into surrender, to really feel safe. And so it just made sense for there to create a safe container that was women only. And what that does is, you know, women come out of that class over and over again. There's that same feedback of, wow, I just saw a group of women in their full power. And they feel that sentiment, I think, is because we explore throughout the class, we explore different emotionalities, we explore different archetypes, and with the goal being embracing your full range, and like you were saying, being feeling more whole. Mm. And so we go into, you know, like warrior energy, we go into like little girl, like innocent energy and playful energy, we go into sensual siren energy. Sometimes we go into like more earthy, like mama nurturing energy, queen energy. So it's, you know, it's a fun little journey where you get to embody all these different parts of you that are all there. It's just some are you're maybe a little bit more disconnected from, and some you're more familiar with. And it's always, it's fascinating to see, you know, it's going to be different for each woman. Each woman has a slightly different experience, but end of the day, they all come out of it going, wow, how freaking cool was that to see a group of women who were so and powerful is the word that comes up always.
Yes.
And all they did was dance and feel connected. Mm. And in my last one, actually this past week, there was a woman who was like, now I know why the men are so scared.
Yes.
She was like, if they come in here and they see like this, what we're doing, they'd be like, what? Mm. And, you know, of course our aim is not to scare men, because you guys are like, the men are, you know, we love our men. but it really is a testament to more the patriarchy and the fact that we have been over thousands of years been sent the messaging that being embodied is dangerous, that being in our sensual bodies is dangerous, our sexuality is dangerous. And so and the reason we've been sent these messages is because they realized it was a threat.
Yeah.
Right. From back in the day, from Mary Magdalene's story onwards, I feel like there's just been
It's even from like the Adam and Eve story onwards, you know?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So many different places where it's like, you know, close your legs, don't show this part of you. This is, it's a threat to the system, which it is, because if women are all in their sensuality and everyone's running around being very in their being, first of all, you know, the men are going to get super excited, which means that men are not going to do as productive work as they were supposed to. Mm. And same thing with women, right? They're not going to be in their masculine, so they're not going to be as productive. And so who loses in that? You know, the systems that are in place.
Right.
So it's it really is part of our primal essence and our power, and we forget because it's been gone for so long. And this is about it's a lot about remembering what is in us, what was in, you know, the lineage of our mothers and grandmothers, and it comes back really easily because it's there. It's just been stuffed down.
As you're speaking, and this, you know, the word sensuality keeps coming back up for me, and kind of the intersections of, or what has been rewarded as being worthy of being sensual, which is looking a certain way, being a certain way. You know, when we see in the media, in the entertainment industry, what is presented to us as sensual looks very different from just the average woman, right? Like, we all look completely different. We're different sizes, different ages, have different levels of physical ability. And I'm just kind of placing myself in, you know, walking into your class and thinking, what fears would come up for me around being, allowing my sensuality to flow. Yeah. And so that piece that you said about the male gaze not being there, I can imagine is hugely important, because first of all, that makes me relax a little bit, like, okay, I'm not performing like we've been trained to do. But what messages, I guess, or what do you want to say to women who have this idea that because I'm a certain weight, or because I look a certain way, or, you know, that I don't have the right to be sensual, or that I'm not sensual?
So wait, can you repeat that question a little?
Yeah,
I don't really think I got it right.
I probably should reform it as well. So I guess I'm wondering around kind of the messages that were sent through the patriarchy, and also through systems like white supremacy, and being able-bodied, being fitting into, like, being cisgendered, and all of that. And then this connection of what we're presented with as sensuality. When we're presented in the media, in the entertainment industry, sensuality are the models, the actresses that look a certain way. And you know, we often don't like come up to that standard. And so how can we allow ourselves to be fully sensual without that comparison, I guess, and that fear of being judged as being ridiculous or you know?
Totally. So one of my teachers and mentors, Sheila Kelly, who is the woman who started and now basically runs and owns an entire chain of studios called S Factor here in the US, and I am one of their instructors, sort of like my side gig. What she says about this, and this was the first thing that popped to mind, is she gets really clear about the difference, and we teach this in all our classes as well at S, and the difference between presentational sexy and authentic sexy.
Yes.
I think this is probably what you're referring to, because yes, what's served on the media platter is very much the presentational version of sexy that we consume, wear high heels, red lipstick. I don't know. What are the traditional things? Be super skinny nowadays. It wasn't always that way, right? But like nowadays, the thing is like uber skinny. What else? Like longer hair. So there's all these like stereotypes that we are being fed by the media about presentationally sexy. And for many of us, you know, part of the journey is trying all that stuff, buying your first pair of heels when maybe you're, I don't know, 16 or something. You're like, oh my God, I got my heels. yeah. You know, trying all the different, the short skirts, the red lipstick, da, 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 da. And pieces of that may feel authentically sexy to you. Like you may rock a red lipstick like no other. And you're like, yeah, I feel powerful as shit when I wear my red lipstick. Great. Right. That means it's reflective of you. There's something that aligns to your truth here, and that's beautiful. And for other women, you know, it is about, you know, they might feel sexiest in some, you know, Converse and jeans and like a white t-shirt. That might be what is actually what they feel sexiest in, or like some sweatpants. Sometimes women feel really sexy in sweatpants. So I think it's really important to differentiate the two and to realize that the way to authentic sexy is through your sensuality, which is why I don't ever really talk about, oh, let's get sexy or sexy this or sexuality at all, because I really focus on the sensuality piece. And to me, the sensuality piece is important because when we connect to our senses, we are then able to get an authentic experience of what feels good for us. And when we follow our pleasure, that's when we are the biggest turn on. That's when we, because what is the sexiest thing of all? It's a woman that is pleasured. If you see a woman like eating cherries, like, oh my God, it's the best thing that's ever happened. Oh, it's hot, right? Mm-hmm. Another woman may hate cherries, and you might like watch her cringe eating a cherry. You're gonna be like, "Oh no, that's not gonna work," right? So it's so really how much sexiness you exude is based on how connected to your sensual body you are. Are you in your senses? Are you divinely pleasured right now? Are you like super in it? And that is what matters less than, oh, am I wearing Victoria's Secret lingerie or how, you know, how skinny am I? Did I gain a few pounds when I was on vacation? No one cares.
I love this, Nadia. This, what was it? Presentational sexiness and authentic. Because presentational is for others, right? But the authentic is for us. And that's the power that we were talking about earlier. This presence is power. It's internal power. It's not power over. It's not power to impress. It's power that is gathered within us.
Yes, precisely.
So juicy. I love it. Okay, so last question is the like, why dance? Why did you really gravitate towards dance as a path of embodiment?
Yeah. Well, I think a part of it is that I was just born like wanting to dance. So very early on, I started ballet classes. I was like, I learned how to walk. And then 2 seconds later, they put me in a ballet class and I was like super into it. So I grew up dancing. I around the age of 8 or so, I was training at a professional like ballet company in hopes of becoming part of the company. And at that age is usually around the time that you start to go on point. If you want to become a professional ballerina, and the teacher sat me down with my parents and was like, yeah, that's not going to work. You have some like super weird needs that won't allow you. You'll have a lot of issues growing up and you can't go on point. And so I disconnected from dance. I tried a couple of other things for a few years, but essentially from, I would say probably the age of like 13, 14, until my early 20s, I was just completely not connected to my body or dancing at all. I just stopped completely. And then in my early 20s, I was partying a lot. I started going to raves. And that was the first time that I reconnected to the power of dance and how much I really loved getting lost in my own like body and just being there and not caring about anything that's going on around me and just feeling like, oh, this is so cathartic. But, you know, the rave culture isn't exactly the healthiest of mm-hmm. cultures. Eventually, that wasn't something, you know, it was like a glimpse. I feel like it was there for a reason, and I'm so happy it came up when it did, because it reminded me that dance really matters to me. But eventually, you know, very soon, actually, I grew out of that phase, and I was like, this is not a healthy way of connecting to myself. And I moved on I went through a few years where I was still very, very, again, I went back to just being fully disconnected, because all I had was this one place where I could connect, and I had stopped, you know, going to raves. And so I was disconnected for a while, working in film, being in film school, and then I found S Factor, which I now teach at. And at the time I was like, oh, cool. It's like a pole dancing studio and like sensual movement. And like, this sounds way more fun than the gym. I'm totally going to sign up for a class. And I did. And then I never left. And that was like, I guess it's been nearly like 8 or so years. And it's become one of my most devoted practices in life. And unless I am in a city where there's no S Factor, I will make sure to go to S Factor class. And in that class, the whole point of the class is to really get women connected to their sensuality. And like we were saying earlier, Sheila Kelly's idea of authentic sexy as opposed to presentational, because at a lot of other pole studios, there's still an element of, okay, now we're going to do this choreography, and now you need to look this way, and burlesque, you know, like burlesque and other pole fitness studios have a sense of sexy that is very also packaged and stereotypical. And it may work for a lot of people, and that's great. But in our classes, what we are doing is a much deeper spiritual journey of reconnecting women back to themselves and exploring what we call their erotic creatures, which is this like, you know, sensual, sexual alter ego. And some of those, we have 10 erotic creature icons, and some of those are, you know, they all dress differently. They all dance to different music, and the emotion in which that they embody, the way in which they feel most connected to their sensuality, is also different. And so this to me is so beautiful, because it's a perfect example of how we are so diverse and so complex, and that we each find our sensuality in a different way, and that it's all accepted in that. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have to do it. Oh, you have to wear heels and they have to, you know, and then your little mini skirt, whatever. No, none of that. And so you've got, you know, women who go there and dance barefoot with jeans on. And there's women who are in their cute little like thigh-high socks and, you know, whatever the stereotypical like images of what you would think of like a woman on a pole, you know. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I feel like I went on a slight feminine tangent here. But essentially, you know, going back to your question of dance, you know, once I got into this world, I finally found that thing that gave me everything that I wanted, which is that connection to myself, connection to my body, a safe space, and a healthy, functional way of doing it. You know, that also, you know, was great because it was like health and fitness, and I got nice abs and like, you know what I mean? Like all the good stuff. It was all the good stuff. And so for me, it became so clear that I wanted more of this in my life, and I wanted to share this with more women in the world. And there's some women who are just not ready for something like still like a pole dancing class. It's too much for them. They're not at that place in their journey. And so when I created Embody, I created it because, again, I loved dancing and being in my body, but I didn't I wanted something that could go anywhere, that didn't need any tools, that didn't require like a pole, something where we weren't just exploring our sensual siren energy, but also these other like the, you know, take no shit energy and the playful energy and like all these different parts of us that are equally important that we forget about sometimes or are less connected to. And so that was the birthing of that class. And so now I just look around and I'm like, this is pretty cool. Like a lot of my life is dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's to me, as you're speaking about this, I'm like, this is your spirituality. This is your spiritual practice. This is your devotional work.
And it's the way you speak about this is how I feel about writing. That when I write, I'm like, everything that I need and want is right here in this moment with these words. And so it's beautiful to see you in your sacred medicine. And I'm just grateful that we get to receive it.
Thank you.
Thank you. So Nadia, how can people work with you? How can people find you? Tell us all about that.
Sure. So all of the good stuff is at nadiamunla.com. So that's NadiaMunla.com. So that's my site. And on there, I talk about my journey a little bit more. I talk about different ways that you can work with me, which essentially is, pretty much if there are spots, one-on-one coaching is something that I offer all year long. And so I love working with women one-on-one. It's so juicy and so fun, and we get to dive so deep. And I run group programs a couple of times a year. So one is in motion right now. We're about halfway through. And that's really great too, because you get a little bit of me and then you get a little bit of community. And we spoke about the importance of sisterhood earlier on.
Yeah.
And then of course there is, everything in connection to my dance class and dance workshops, which is at embodydanceclass.com. And over there, you'll get, there's a schedule with all the different places I'm at. New York is sort of my home, so that I have quote unquote residency here. So that's where most classes happen. But I just had a workshop, a half day workshop in Philadelphia, hoping to do one soon coming up somewhere else. So, and I'm always open to hosting in your neighborhood, in your city, if you email me and there's enough people that you have. If you have a set of girlfriends and they're like, we all want to dance, this sounds great, come to us. Mm-hmm. I'm always open to exploring the possibility of, because I just love traveling and I love meeting new women and being in new cities. So it's a win-win situation for everyone. So you can reach me through either one of my websites and contact me, or just email me at nadia@nadiamunla.com if that's of interest to you, or if you have any other questions about anything really. And lastly, I want to offer all of your listeners a little gift. We talked so much about embodiment, and for many women, they might be like, all right, these were such great concepts, and other than taking a breath in and out, what else can I do? What else can I do to like get a little bit more connected, a little bit more embodied? And so what I created was what I call the Embodiment Starter Kit. And so it's like a great place to start. I have a few moving meditations that are really simple that I've shot for you, and little playlists that accompany each movement, and a sensual meditation that gets you really connected to your five senses. So all of that is in that little package, and it's totally free. And that's something that you can get at bit.ly/embodygift. So I'm guessing, are we going to have links somewhere as well?
We'll have all the links. Yeah, we'll have all the links. Nadia, you've also got an Embody at Home practice, right?
Yes.
For those of us like me who live outside of the US or just are not able to get to you, how can we get in on the juiciness?
Yes, thank you for reminding me. So this is a new thing that we're doing and I'm loving it. Based on popular demand, we now do, I do Embody at Home. And if you also go to embodydanceclass.com, you'll see there's one tab that says Embody at Home. And over there, you will be able to purchase for, I think it's $4.99, just an MP3 that I've put together, which is essentially a virtual Embody class. So it's the entire playlist and my voice that guides you through the entire hour, going through the different archetypes that we spoke about earlier. And a lot of women have been loving this because you can just pop it into your iTunes, put it on your iPod, do it in your garden, do it in your living room, do it anywhere you want. And coming soon are going to be little express versions of this. So like 15-minute ones, so that you can just, if you're like, oh, I don't have an hour, you can do sort of a nice short one to get you like in between calls or work stuff that you've got. So all of that, embodydanceclass.com, you'll find it there. And if you have any questions at all, contact us through either one of those sites, and me or my assistant will get back to you and give you all the information.
Amazing. Yeah, I got your starter kit and I loved it. There's some great videos on there. You just walk people through it, how to do these moving meditations. It's really sensual, but it's just juicy. I loved it. And I'm going to be, after this interview, I'm going to go check out your Embody at Home stuff and get that, because it sounds wonderful.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much, Nadia, for this incredible conversation. Same as last time, I just got so much from it, and I'm just grateful that you were able to come back on. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So to the sisters listening, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Don't forget to subscribe to the Wild Mystic Woman podcast on iTunes and YouTube. And if you want to join a community of other Wild Mystic Women who are journeying on this spiritual entrepreneurial path, then make sure to check out my brand new offering, which is the Sovereign Sisterhood. So the Sovereign Sisterhood is a monthly membership community for wild women and modern mystics. It's a virtual temple space for women who are craving that sacred space to explore womanhood, spirituality, creativity, business, leadership, sacred activism, and how they can live and lead as the most powerful expression of their truest selves. So you can find out more about the Sovereign Sisterhood at wildmysticwoman.com/sovereign-sisterhood. And I hope to see you in there if that calls to you. So that's it for this episode. And until next time, don't forget to keep trusting your truth.